south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, just a little comment about living really cheap in Latin America. Remember last show or the show before, I was talking about Captain Mango and how he was paying, I don't know, I think it was $200 or $300 a month. Living in a very noisy barrio with roosters and chicken buses and cantinas and hawkers walking back and forth on the street yelling, aguacate, aguacate. Well, wouldn't you know it, Captain Mango chimed in and said, Johnny, you're wrong. Hey, I'm wrong a lot of times. He said, I wasn't paying $200 or $300 a month. I was paying $130 a month, and it included water. Now, I'm not sure if he had water 24/7 because, you know, in those barrios, that's all municipal water. And you heard me talk about how municipalities and basically anything run by the government do a terrible job. And that there are very few Latin American countries whose municipal water systems are dependable and deliver a nice strong flow of water 24/7. They just don't. Though I have to admit, it used to be true in Costa Rica, where I lived many years ago. There was water 24/7, municipal water. And coming out of the faucet, powerful too. Even if you didn't have a cistern. Isn't that amazing? But I guess it's not like that now. The thing is, if you're looking to rent in a Latin American city and you ask the landlord, is there water 24/7? Many times he'll say, yeah, of course. And he's right. But that's not the whole truth either. Fact is, if you're driving through a barrio or anywhere in the city where they have municipal water, you'll see cisterns dotting the roofline, like big black mushrooms of all sizes and shapes just growing out of the rooftops. It's an ugly sight. What does that mean? It means water is not 24/7. If it was, there would be no need to buy a cistern. You get it? So if you're going to rent in a Latin American city, that's an easy little trick. Just look on the rooftops. If there are cisterns, you will not, in reality, have water 24/7. But with a cistern, it will seem like you will. Unless, of course, your cistern is undersized for your house. It happens a lot, you know. Especially if it's a house that's got more and more people moving in. That's why often it's much more preferable and more expensive to live in a gated, guarded community, because most gated, guarded communities have their own pozo or well. That means there's water 24/7. And normally when they build a gated, guarded community, they know how many lots are in the place and how many houses there will be eventually. So they design the well and the pump to accommodate that. For example, I lived in a house in a gated, guarded community for around 10 years. I had a cistern, a huge cistern, but that's just me. None of my neighbors had one because there was water 24/7, but I just put one in just to be safe, and engineers like to over-design things. Something to do with that prepper gene all engineers seem to have. I think in all that 10 years, I used it 3 times. In other words, the auxiliary pump, my auxiliary pump, kicked in, and I was drawing water from the cistern just 3 times in 10 years. And that only happened because 2 of those times, they had to clean out the main huge cistern by the pump, you know, the communal cistern, which meant draining that gigantic cistern so no one had any water flow for a day, unless you had your own auxiliary cistern, which I had. Just me, no one else. By the way, the well maintenance guy would come around a day before and knock on your door and say, hey, tomorrow, no water, so prepare yourself. So that people could fill up plastic garbage cans and stuff with water to get them through the next day. The fact is, the houses in that neighborhood even had water when the power went out. Of course, the power didn't go out much at all, except during the occasional huge storm or when a tree knocked down the power line. We still had water because the main huge communal cistern and the pump were located high on a hill. So even without power, we had decent flow because of the gravity feed. By the way, if you were wondering why people with municipal water supplies put their cisterns on the roof and not in their backyards on the grass or whatever, that's because a cistern on a roof can operate by gravity feed if the electricity goes off. If, for example, you've got the cistern in the backyard on level ground, you'd need an electric pump to use that water when power goes out. But back to being able to pay very cheap rent, like what Captain Mango was paying. I guess he actually lived there, he said, for 30 months. Of course, as you might remember from the previous show, it had its many downsides, including the noise pollution. Though, just to let you know, if you want to live really cheap, you're really on a tight budget. You could live somewhat comfortably anyway, for, as in Captain Mango's case, $130 a month, including water. Of course, for Captain Mango, he was only living there temporarily while a house was being built for his pleasure on that coffee plantation he runs, which was about, I'd say, 10 or 15 minutes away from that cheap rental he was staying at. The thing is, as he'll tell you if you ever get to talking to him, he was only supposed to be living in that low-rent joint for 6 months and then he'd move into the new house, right smack dab in the middle of the coffee plantation. Well, you know what they say about the plans of mice and men and lagtime in Latin America. For him, anyway, 6 months turned into 30. And now he's well-situated on the coffee plantation, and I guess they even have a little area with chickens and pigs. That's all new, so we'll see how that works out. So, anyway, if you're up in the States or Canada and you're moving along quite slowly on that plan B because you're thinking you don't have enough money to afford a decent place for $300 or $400 or $500 a month, just remember, down here in Latin America, it ain't like up in the States. You can, and some expats do, pay unbelievably low rent. And if I recall, I was at Captain Mango's cheap rent place, I think once or twice. It was a lone-standing small house, detached, even with a little garden, and not part of some low-end apartment complex. Oh, not to say his place wasn't low-end. It was, and scruffy. But hey, you gets what you pays for. Just saying, though, even if you're on an extreme budget, it can be done. So if the rent thing's what's stopping you from pulling the trigger on your plan B, I'll put you in touch with Captain Mango. He'll give you the pros and cons and how to do it. The main thing, though, besides the noise, is the security issue when you live in a low-rent area. Captain Mango could give you pointers on that, too. All right, Jethro, let's take an email from Jed. Come and listen to my story about a man named Jed. Showing my age again, right? And I'll paraphrase this as usual, cut out the boring parts. Jed says, hi, Johnny. You were mulling around an interesting subject the other week on mating and dating. You were talking about having things in common with the person you're dating. After all, you have to talk about something. So here's my take on mating and dating Latinos and Latinas. I feel that this is a really realistic discussion in the cross-cultural dating game. It is necessary. In fact, he says, I have dated and interacted with a couple of different Latinas. Ones from both modest homes and well-educated Latinas from upper middle classes. I have a couple of thoughts on the process, and I'd like to toss in my experiences. When I was younger, I went to Latin America as one of those backpackers that went native, and thus I dated a couple of Latina neighborhood girls from modest homes. The thing is, Johnny, I wouldn't classify them as undereducated or intellectually void. But the discussions I had with them were not about higher subject matters. And when they sat with their female friends, they would talk about babies, soap operas, and shopping. When with me, they would talk about babies and how they'd love to go to the U.S., and they'd discuss the material things they'd like to have and have me buy at the store. And when I had the chance to look at things they'd written on paper, it looked as if a third or even fifth grader had written it. I don't want that to sound all bad because there were some positives. Many of these girls come from family-oriented homes. They had good values and would have been good mothers. So it is true. They can be very good and loyal partners if you choose the right girl. And those neighborhood or barrio girls are materialistically low maintenance. You can usually give them $50 or $100 a week to go shopping and they'll be delighted and come back with all the household essentials. They are very good shoppers and know how to live frugally. Though there are some negatives, besides not having too much to talk about, when you marry a Latina, you marry her family. With poor families, you'll get relatives asking you for money. There'll be a little petty theft around your house from friends and families that come over or who you invite, and other low-grade behaviors and customs that poor people have. All right, let's stop for a second. That's part of Jed's email. Just a little personal comment here. I, too, have known some very noble and nice middle and lower middle class girls with very good values. And you will find if they haven't gone to university, you won't have much in common with them or much to talk about. And of course, when you do marry a Latina or you go steady or have a Latina girlfriend, man, am I showing my age, huh? People don't say go steady anymore, do they? Man, that's very old school, huh? Anyway, it's true. You marry or you have a long-term Latino or Latina partner, you marry their family too. And of course, in any family, especially poor families, there'll be some male characters you won't want to get too buddy-buddy with. Not that they're bad people or gang members or anything. But you know what they say, you are the average of your closest five friends. To be kind, let's just say if your significant other is a lower middle class Latino or Latina, there'll be some immediate family members you won't want to invite into your house. Now, as far as relatives asking for money, I don't care if you're going out with a poor girl or a girl who's the tits of the Ritz. Family members will come out of the woodwork and hit you up for dough. In fact, I was going out with a beautiful Latina way back when, whose mother and father hit me up for dough. The father, twice. He paid me back the first time, but the second time, it's been years and I'm still waiting. Oh, and get this, not so long ago, I took a Latina girlfriend of mine, a middle-class girl, on a trip to Europe with me. When we returned and we were back in Latin America for about a month, she said that three of her relatives, who had seen the photos she'd posted on social media about the trip, in other words, rumor got around within the family, and her relatives naturally assumed she was rolling in the dough. Because your average Latino, or even above average Latino, could never afford a trip to Europe. Anyway, three relatives phoned her up, assumed she was flush, and asked her for a loan. And one of them, she said, and I couldn't believe the balls on that guy, asked her if she'd co-sign or be a guarantor of a $4,000 loan. For guess what? To pay a coyote to get him safely to the States through Mexico. Can you believe that? And here, I thought I'd heard everything. I guess I haven't. Of course, she told them, by all means, go. Hit the road. But she didn't co-sign. By the way, you know how that works, right? I spoke about it on a previous show. Coyotes are very organized. They'll finance you at an interest rate. They just need a local co-signer they can lean on if you don't pay. Anyway, for you single guys and gals out there, when you come on down, get that plan B going. Those are a few things to look out for. All right, now, for the next part of Jed's email, he says, Johnny, over the years, I've spent a good amount of time online practicing my Spanish. I became a language exchange partner and friends with a few well-educated Latinas from Latin America online. In fact, he says the majority of these ladies were more educated than I am and could maintain, create, and weave some great discussions on almost any subject. I admit it really was a pleasure talking with them, but I don't think I could date or partner up with any of them. Why? Because there were certain things I noticed with these particular high-class Latinas. The highly educated Latinas you'll find online. They're simply high maintenance. They want a nice car, a nice house, trips to the U.S., trips to the U.S. shopping, the latest model cell phone, etc., etc. I have also noticed a lot of the younger, well-educated Latinas are getting woke ideas and expectations about gringo men because they're so hooked into gringo culture and gringo media. I've found, he says, that many of these ladies are getting the idea that gringo guys are spineless ATM machines that will pay for an expensive lifestyle. They're perfectly fine with letting a beautiful, sexy Latina dominate them. Turns out many of these educated ladies with high expectations are living at home after years of university. They're used to a certain standard of living on mommy and daddy's higher earning power. They usually have had maids around the house all the time and nannies, so they don't know how to cook or clean. Or just don't cook and clean. They never had to. They just want to get taken care of. Basically, we're talking about high-maintenance princesses with no job, no income, no work ethic. But they've had years of university and can hold a stellar conversation. All that because their parents could afford it. And if you hook up with one of these ladies, you'll have plenty to talk about. It'll be very interesting, etc., etc. But you'll also be a cash machine. Then Jed says, I know, these are a couple of fairly extreme personal examples. There are surely some great high-quality Latinas in the middle of the spectrum. But do be cautious of those well-educated girls you find online. They're not working. They don't have jobs. They're living at home, spending most of their day online and on social media and shopping sites and making conversation with their girlfriends who are also princesses living at home. They can be a lot more money in trouble than they're worth, though it depends on your tolerance. Signing off for now, Jed. Thanks for the podcast, Johnny. I've enjoyed them over the years. All right, Jed, thanks for that. You know, I've gone out with a few of those high-end Latinas myself. Never seemed to work out too well. Of course, when you're in a new relationship, you end up buying them things here and there. Small stuff, but inevitably, the material demands get bigger. And eventually, it starts wearing on you, and you start saying no. And then, this has happened to me and so many of my gringo friends. She'll pout and call you a tacaño, which means cheapskate. After a while, it wears on you. Then again, I had a few girlfriends way back when up in the States where the same thing happened. I wouldn't buy this or that thing that they wanted or trip they wanted, whatever. They'd pout and call you a cheapskate. Well, you know, I've been down here so long in Latin America, over 30 years. I know you longtime listeners are sick of hearing me say that 30-year thing, right? But you see, there are new listeners coming on all the time, so I have to mention it once in a while so they know my opinions and blatherings aren't coming from a greenhorn. Anyway, over the years, I've come up with a hard rule for dating Latinas. For me, they have to have a steady job. I mean a real steady job. You wouldn't believe how many Latinas living at home don't work. They say they're going to university. Maybe they're taking two classes. Who knows? They'll say, I'm going to university. Well, that doesn't cut it. They have to have a real steady job. Not a part-time nail lady at a beauty salon. Not a Tupperware or Mary Kay salesperson. None of those kind of jobs can support a person living on his own. You can't believe how many Tupperware, Avon, or Mary Kay salesmen you run into down here. There are all kinds of multi-level marketing companies neighborhood ladies and girls are hooked into. Sorry, ladies, those aren't real jobs. I'm talking about a real, full-time, on-the-books job. At a bank, internet company, even a Starbucks. Then you know the girl's good with money, good with scheduling, and is not, or most likely not, high maintenance. Though it's sad that I've seen many a clueless gringo. So happy to find a beautiful girl that would have been way out of his class up in the States. Turn a nice workaday girl like that into a high-maintenance monster. It's happened to more friends of mine than I'd like to count, including expat Eddie. Now, of course, if you're really loaded, you might not mind. Just saying. Oh, and speaking of those first early golden days of any relationship when you're just starting dating, I once read a book, I can't remember which psychologist said, you should never talk about politics with a new lady or guy until about the fourth date. Of course, he was talking about mating and dating up in the States. His reasoning was that after about four dates, you'll know if you're compatible and there's a spark there and whether you want to carry on with the relationship. And if you do, and you find out you hate his or her politics after that fourth date, that is, you can work through it and agree to disagree. Though I can't see how that'll work in today's political landscape, since these days Democrats and Republicans seem to absolutely hate each other. We don't have to go into that. Funny thing, too, you think most expats you meet down here would have given up on politics. It's futile. But many are idiots who cling strongly to their corrupt party, too. They're all corrupt, man. Face it. Seems like people are stamped with either or, and they can't be flipped. But that's the U.S. Here in Latin America, with educated locals, that is, you rarely meet a person whose politics can't be flipped with just a little education and a few good real-world examples. Though it is tough, I admit, at first, if you're dating a guy or girl who went to a public university. Most public universities in Latin America are free, so they're just loaded with poor and middle-class kids who can't afford to go to a private university. And as far as public and private universities, it seems to be a black and white thing. Public universities are almost completely socialist, loaded with socialist teachers whose professors have a revolving door in and out of government. Sound familiar? Whereas Latin American private universities that cost money, nowhere near what private universities cost up in the States, down here, let's say $5,000 a year, which is beyond the reach of a middle-class family. Anyway, so basically you've got nothing but upper-middle-class and wealthy kids going to the private university. That is, children of businessmen and entrepreneurs who come out of college as basically conservative capitalists. The problem is a huge percentage of the ladies who graduate from private universities are high maintenance because, well, they're princesses. Like the ladies Jed was talking about, the ones he was speaking Spanish to on the internet. Take, for example, Guatemala. There's maybe 10 private universities in Guatemala, each of them having maybe 500 to 2,000 kids enrolled. Whereas the big private free university called USAC, University of San Carlos, has 100,000 kids enrolled. That means in Guatemala, for example, if you're going to date a college girl, she most likely went to the public university. After all, they're turning out 10 times as many kids as the private schools. And as mentioned, public schools are noted for turning out left-wing socialists. And you know what? In my early days in Guatemala, I went out with a few of those ladies, those left-wing socialists from University of San Carlos. And I discovered the strange thing, the indoctrination, the socialist indoctrination, didn't penetrate too deeply. It was only on the surface. It didn't seem to stick. In other words, it didn't take long. After a few deep discussions about how the world worked, capitalism, supply and demand, motivation versus indoctrination, the idiocy and stupidity of Marxism, why socialist societies always fail? It's been tried dozens of times, yet still failed. Anyway, in my experience, it doesn't take long, and it's not hard, to flip a Latin American socialist who has been indoctrinated into socialism at one of those Latin American public universities. So if you're getting this, what I'm saying is, we all want to have a girlfriend, boyfriend, partner, whatever, that we have lots of things to talk about. Not just babies, TikTok, soap operas, and the retired assians. Well, if you find a girl or guy that's university educated here in Latin America, you will have plenty to talk about and have good discussions too. Just remember though, the ladies and guys who graduated from private universities are often jaded, pampered princes and princesses. Whereas the girls and guys that graduate from public university, they're just as educated, but salt of the earth. The ladies will know how to cook, sew, balance a budget, and manage the house. Just remember, though, in their college years, they were indoctrinated with socialist tendencies, though thankfully, they're not stubborn and mule-headed about it. They can be dissuaded in usually a pretty short time. However, 10 or so years ago, I had such a girlfriend. She had a degree in journalism from that Guatemalan public university. She actually wrote articles as a stringer for a socialist Central American newspaper, which sort of made her too indoctrinated to even flip. Needless to say, we had one too many political and philosophical arguments, and it ended. So guys and gals, I'd stay away from journalist majors who graduated from socialist public universities. And of course, look out for those high-maintenance graduates from Latin American private schools. Though, you know, those suggestions or rules, you might say, are not cut and dry. Just observations from steps and missteps from a guy who's had 30-plus years in Latin America. By the way, as you may have figured, some of the emails I get, I can't read or even edit or censor on the air, because they're too raw, true or not. And sometimes, you know, it'll be 11 or 12 o'clock at night, and I break out into spontaneous laughter just sitting and going through those emails. Though some of them are too funny not to mention, so that's why I heavily edit them. Though some frequent listeners and frequent emailers, I don't have to edit at all. Like, for example, Dave Number One, the original Dave, who is an English teacher, so obviously he's a pretty cultured guy. But he is from California, though we won't hold that against him. He says, Johnny, about your recent show talking about gringo guys sending dick pics to Latin American ladies online on those Cupid dating websites. He says, Johnny, creepy guys sending dick pics was a common occurrence on the reality TV show To Catch a Predator with Chris Hansen that aired between 2004 and 2007 on NBC. That was the first time I heard of guys doing that. It was a show, he said, where decoys posing as underage females would chat with men online in chat rooms, set up meetings, and the TV cameras would be there to record the meetings, expose predators on national television. Dave says, those guys are so out of touch with reality that they think that because some men might get turned on by naked pictures of women, therefore women must like the same thing reciprocally from men, too. I guess he says there'll always be idiot guys on the internet who think that women are turned on by that. All right, Dave, me, Johnny, you're right. Never heard of that show, though. In fact, one of the Latinas that told me about all that dick pic stuff, she said, it's happened to every one of her friends on those dating sites. Most often, she said, after sort of bowing out, even bowing out politely. She said, when you tell a guy you've been texting a little bit with that you're not interested, then, with a certain percentage of them, come a barrage of insults and dick pics. A sick sort of revenge, maybe, for a bruised ego? All right, now Dave Number One writes on a different topic. He says, about electric showerheads. By the way, I call them suicide showerheads. He says, Johnny, I know you've mentioned electric showerheads on the show a few times. I'd like to tell you about my experience. The idea of having electricity flowing through your shower pipe right above your head is frightening, at least to most people, unless you're Latin American. Then it's just part of life. However, Johnny, I've never heard of any electrocutions or read any news articles about death by a showerhead. All right, Dave, I'll answer that. Nope, I've never heard about anyone getting killed that way either. But you know what they say, God protects drunks, children, and idiots, right? Maybe just an old wives' tale, but seemingly true. That said, everyone I know who's been down here a while has been shocked a few times. I have. Nothing serious, though, but it is a disturbing feeling, knowing there's stray electricity and you're standing in water. Anyway, Dave says, my first experience with an electric showerhead on my first trip to Guatemala and Central America in 2002 was shocking. I was in a hotel in eastern Guatemala near the border of Belize, and the shower did not drain well. So there was a small puddle of water on the shower floor. As I stepped into the shower, I felt a slight shock, I really needed that shower, so I took a chance and lived to tell the story. Later on that same trip in Nicaragua, I turned the switch on an electric shower head to its highest setting, hoping to get warmer water. I turned the switch and a blue spark the size of a quarter jumped out of the switch. Again, I lived to tell the story. I found, though, the trick with electric shower heads is to get the water pressure just right. If you have the flow just right, the water gets nicely warm. If it's too fast or too slow, it will not get warm. You got to hit that sweet spot. And even when you get the warm water you like, the water pressure is much lower than what we gringos are used to and does not make for a very satisfying shower, but you do get water. He says, I recently rented an Airbnb in Guatemala and was unhappy to see an electric shower head installed. And here I thought my days of staying at places with suicide shower heads was over. However, there was something different about this shower head. There was a 5-foot-long hose dangling down from behind it. The hose had a small shower head attached to it on the opposite end. I turned on the shower and noticed the water was flowing from the normal shower head and from the dangling hose at the same time. He said, I was able to pick up the long hose and spray warm water on myself, and it was nice. Much better than just the normal shower head above. Dave said, Amazon sells that shower head, and he gave me the link. All right, Dave, thanks for that good insight, because all of us travelers eventually run into those suicide shower heads. Just two comments. I've noticed that nearly every one of those shower heads is made, guess where? In Italy. Look at the fine print. Though I guess maybe the Chinese are doing it too. They just have to be, right? Though that made in Italy thing seems strange. Since I've been to Italy, stayed in a lot of hotels and never saw a single one there. Number two, what most people don't know is there is that switch you're talking about. One end of the switch has one bar and the other has two bars, which means hot and hotter or cold and less cold, depending on your experience with those things. Why they even have that switch, I don't know, because everyone, and I mean everyone, wants it hotter than it usually is. And as for me, once in a while when I see it's on the lower setting, I've never had the balls to kick it up to the higher setting with my bare hand or finger. I always use the blunt end of a toothbrush to kick it to setting number two. Even being an electrical engineer and receiving hundreds upon hundreds of electrical shocks in my life. You know, us engineers and electricians will wire things while they're still hot. We know there's a risk of shock. We also know how to judge when, if we do get a shock, the amperage is low so we don't get killed. Even so, I haven't got the balls to stand in the shower and flip that switch with my bare hand. Dave, you're a better man than I am.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.